And now, the WadFam Chalk Pod.
Hello and welcome to the WadFam Chalk Pod. I'm Dylan Weaver.
I'm Andrew Sabo.
And we're back again, talking about episode 532, Pink is Not My Color.
You sounded very NPR there. You're like, hello and welcome to Fresh Air. This is Dylan Weaver.
Yeah,
you sounded cheery.
Every once in a while, I switch up my cadence.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's worth it. It's good. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. So this is
sometimes I think I rush it for no actual reason, and I think it sounds better when I like
just
actually like take my
just
time
get in
on
touch
it a little
with
bit.
Your, yeah, yeah. I mean, like we got the setup going. We got the headphones. We got the official mics and the laptops. I mean,
Yeah. Spoiler for the people listening: we have two pairs of headphones, two mics, two pop filters, two laptops, and an iPad.
And live audio feeding back to us. Like, this is...
Otherwise, why would we have headphones otherwise?
Well, I mean, you know, we can hear ourselves. This is like, just like borderline low-quality radio stuff right here.
Uh-huh. Except that we're still in a bedroom.
Yep.
With bad acoustics.
Yeah. Yeah, when are we gonna fix that?
I don't know.
Maybe we just... move somewhere.
Yeah.
Or
yeah, when Andrew and I get our own apartment.
That would be so bad.
We'll both stay in one bedroom yeah, and make the other bedroom a studio.
Oh yeah. We will get so much more Andrew Sabo content. Because I will have to justify it. I will have to justify having an entire room.
We'll also get chairs that don't squeak.
Yep.
And learn not to tap our fingers.
Oh. Wait, what do you mean tap our fingers? Like cracker fingers?
Cracking or just...
Or like this stuff?
Yeah. We get a surprising amount of...
Oh, mic feedback from
yep,
that.
Of just people like touching their mics.
Yeah. That's so odd that that's a thing, but definitely is a thing.
Yeah.
Now you know, audio medium, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, they all hear it every week.
Oh, that's true.
Because I don't have good enough software to edit it out.
Yeah, well, and I don't really listen to the show.
No, I mean, I only edit it.
Yeah. Although, I did just listen to... this is not a proud moment, and we'll get into the episode. I forgot which episode I was prepping for today, and so I had to go into the end of last episode to see which one we were talking about. I was like,
you could have texted me, Andrew.
Yeah, I could have, but I also could just do that. And then I was like, wow, these outro credits are very nice. I've literally never heard them before.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, Nathan does a good job on that.
He does a great job. And I didn't realize you like superimposed the score on the outside. Or
oh,
on
yeah.
The outro and everything. Yeah. And like lines up real well.
It's almost as though I've been doing this for 40 episodes.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah, that there's 40 of them, for better or for worse. I say better, but you know,
For better or for worse, an episode we covered. It's an episode that exists.
It definitely does, and we might cover it at some point.
I don't.
Let's get into Pink is Not My Color, Dylan.
All right. Oh, hi there. Welcome to the pod. I'm Dylan James Weaver, but most folks around here just call me Dylan. Why don't you get the whole family together and join us for another exciting episode of the WadFam Chalk Pod. Got a double feature directed and written by our buddy Nathan Hubler.
Ah, gotta love him. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, doing a good job. This episode first aired November 8th of 2003.
Okay.
And are we're going to continue the trend of doing vocal features at the top?
Sure. Go for it.
So Our two guest voices in this episode are Janelle and Michaela Borland, also known as Mike. Janelle, who is Peter Borland's wife, that really threw me off in my notes because I always just call him Borland.
Yeah.
And now there are three Borlands.
Three Borlands.
Yeah. But Janelle is voiced by Mimi Monaco, who has a total of 4 IMDb credits, all in one-off TV appearances in the late 80s, early 90s. An episode of Twilight Zone.
Oh.
And a couple other things.
Was Twilight Zone still airing in the 80s?
Yeah.
Wow. Hmm.
But, Michaela or Mike is voiced by Tierra Abbott, who is a martial artist.
Like, professionally?
Yeah. Like that, well, or, like, was at the as time. A child. I don't know if she's continued to do it. But she did stunts for Bad News Bears. And also a handful of just, like, random TV appearances.
Okay.
Mid-2000s. A couple, like, recurring bits on shows that I don't recognize.
Okay.
But, yeah. So that's our two guest vocals for the episode that we haven't covered before.
Awesome.
Do you want to just roll the promo?
I think that's what to do.
What
it do?
I'm going to roll the promo.
On the next Adventures in Odyssey, Connie and Joanne meet Agent Borland's family.
Oh, Connie, Joanne, this is Michaela.
Or Mike for short.
But why does it seem like her dad is always missing in action?
He always calls to apologize when he misses games.
And he's not the only one.
Mitch, it's about time. I've been trying to get through to you for 20 minutes.
Sorry.
How will it all turn out? Find out on the next Adventures in Odyssey.
Not sure why it's circus music.
Yeah, I'm getting a very, like, Oompa Loompas song from Willy Wonka from that. Like, but, okay. No,
that's fair.
For, that's like, an fair. Oddly serious episode, it's...
Yeah. It's not a lighthearted episode.
No, which is surprising, because, like, when we were talking beforehand, like, in the last episode, like, when Mitch was coming in, for some reason in my head, like, I thought this was going to be different, but not the case.
Nope.
So the episode begins with, like, Connie and Joanne, right? And they're pulling into...
Yeah, they're like, driving through the neighborhood to get to Mitch's apartment.
Yeah.
Joanne makes, like, an under-her-breath comment about, like, these apartments seem very economical.
Yeah.
To just be like, Mitch has a tiny apartment.
Yeah.
Which, or whatever.
Or he's in a rough area.
He's a bachelor in DC, who
presumably makes good money. I can't imagine being in the FBI.
Yeah, but he's also like still in training.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like, he literally just moved there.
Yeah,
like if he has a closet, he is doing fine.
Yeah.
And then so they pull in. Connie's on the phone with him, and she's talking to Mitch, right?
Yeah,
and then that's when we find out that they're just finishing up the case on Andromeda.
Yep, they're finishing up.
Name drop. We are still covering NovaCom stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and we will be for 5 more episodes.
Then never again.
We will never address NovaCom ever
or mention it.
No,
we can't.
Nope, it's dead to us.
I have spent an entire year of my life talking about NovaCom.
Yeah, by the time we're done, that will be true. It's not quite true yet.
It's close.
Oh, yeah.
It's too close.
Yep. So the big thing here... Well, so yeah. So they name drop the Andromeda case. It also... Mm-hmm. She brings up that it's been 2 weeks and a day since they last talked, which is when they had their fight.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the road trip took 2 weeks,
more or less. So the road trip took a long time. And Mitch... is saying that he is busy. He's not like available right now. And then Connie like says like she understands and whatnot. And then she busts in on him like in his apartment. And thank goodness nothing else was happening.
Well, he's walking out the
door. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she, she can't. I mean, she doesn't have a key.
Like,
She knocks on the door, mm-hmm. and he comes up to it, because he's like, he says to her on the phone, like, hey, someone's at the door, let me come out. And then it's Connie, which is like kind of an overplayed trope, but I love it here.
Oh, it's so cute. It's, and the way he says
it's so fun.
It's so, because they're like on the phone and whatever. And it's like, Connie! And she's like, you can tell, like, she's got a big grin on her face. And then we get another wit intro.
I know!
What?
A hat trick of wit intros.
Yeah, this is the hat trick. This is throwing your ball caps onto the ice and whatever.
A nice turkey.
Yeah.
Some may say.
For a bowling analogy for wit intros, this is what we got.
Whatever. I don't know. Well, he once again, not even mentioned.
Nope.
But he's our main character, and I don't know, Paul Harlinger demanded. I must be at the beginning of this episode. Gotta put me in.
I wonder if that's a thing. I wonder if it's like wit.
There's gotta be episodes with no wit, though.
With no intro and no wit mention?
There's gotta be.
Oh, well, because, I mean, all the time where wit was gone.
Well, yes, but that's pre-Paul Harlinger. But, during his stay on the show, I can't imagine that he had some contract that demanded him be heard in every episode. Because it's not as though, he doesn't get credited at the end.
No. Anything. He just does the intro.
So, and that's pre-recorded. He's not re-recording that every time. He's not Nathan Haverstick.
What a hero. What an absolute hero. He gives so much. And so we come back in from the intro with Connie apologizing to Mitch. And then Mitch returns
back.
And it's super sweet because she's like, they kind of go through it really fast, which is, I guess, like, just the rush nature of the event. But, like,
but also, like, we've kind of established from the get-go that this fight wasn't a huge deal to begin with.
Yeah, it was just an excuse for her to come out and see him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's more of a gesture of goodwill than it is, like, I needed to apologize in person.
Yeah. That is, I mean, that is actually nuts to me. Like, I get it, like, I'm an exceptionally clingy person, but they didn't talk for 2 weeks at all.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess this isn't, but, I mean, they had instant messenger and stuff like that, and, like, you know, emails.
Yeah, but she was also on the road, so she didn't have internet.
Yeah, that's fair.
She could have called from Joanne's new cell phone.
They could have texted on her, presumably, like, Nokia brick phone.
Yeah.
Early 2000s had texting.
I know, but, like,
not good texting. No. And so,
T9.
Yeah.
Y'all remember that?
No, I don't, actually. That is a foreign language to me. What is T9?
T9 was when you would text with the numbers before you had phones that had letters on them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You had to do. Yeah. It was before QWERTY keyboard phones.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, my grandmother still does that. That's... Shout out Gloria Taliana.
I can't decide whether or not to cut that.
She deserves it. She's a saint. If it means anything. All right. That's a tangent, not getting into it. So Mitch has to leave, and then they're going over to the Borlands, right?
Yeah.
What? Like, are they friends with the Borlands? Like, I get that, like, you're in the area, but, like...
It is a clear, like, plot contrivance to be like, hey, the Borlands are in D.C.
How would they have gotten in contact? Connie just stays with the Borlands. Yeah, why would
Connie... Even though Connie's had, like, two interactions.
Yeah, and, like
she puts it out like she was contacting him. Well, because Mitch says, like, wait till Borland hears about this or whatever, and she's like, I'm headed over there now. That's where I'm staying. And so...
It's just so surprising that they would do that, and also that, like... I just don't get it.
Well, I mean, it is... You purely just have to recognize it as...
It's a plot device.
They wanted... the character, like, they wanted Connie to stay with pre-existing characters and wanted opportunities to give Connie a taste of
being an FBI wife.
Yeah. So, which was really good. It was a really good thing. And
right.
Like,
no, like
and it fleshes out Borland's character.
It all works.
Yeah.
Except for the initial conceit where yeah. it's weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Mitch has to rush off.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a meeting or class or yeah. one or the other, because he is currently like working Andromeda stuff for the FBI while taking FBI Academy classes.
Oh,
So he's got a very packed schedule.
Yeah, he's a busy guy.
And so Connie gets back into the car and is clearly upset about the fact that Mitch had to run off. They were able to set up dinner plans for that
yeah.
night, but she was bummed that she didn't get to spend time with him.
Yeah.
And this is a continuing conflict throughout this whole episode that is incredibly well written.
Mm-hmm. Because she says a thing.
Oh, sorry.
So she says a thing when she sits down with Joanne, like, because Joanne's like, seems like something's up, and she's like, well, I guess I expect too much of these moments. And that's a kind of a motif that comes back later and at the very end of the episode as well.
Yeah. So the thing with it is that Connie is absolutely in the wrong here. She just showed up on the door of her boyfriend who she hasn't talked to in 2 weeks and expected to spend time with him.
Yeah. Who is, as she knows, incredibly busy.
Right. So she's not right in being upset, but it is 100% understandable that she is.
Yeah.
Her character, while being wrong, is very real.
Yeah, and like
you're like,
you can sympathize with it.
That doesn't seem like, oh, they're doing like the irrationally clingy Connie, but it's like, no. You would have that thing, and she even addresses the conflicted nature of it,
yeah.
where she's like, yeah, like, I do expect too much from this. I shouldn't have just assumed that I could come down here and jump in on his life, but I did, and it's hard.
Yeah, well, and also, like,
really
you can understand,
that.
Yeah, you can understand both sides super well, and, like, yeah, like, from her perspective, like, with the exception of the initial Mitch being like, Connie, like, surprised and like seemed happy, like, he seems incredibly rushed, incredibly disconnected. Like, obviously it's not, you know, it's Odyssey, we're not gonna get, like, you know, them making out for 30 seconds or anything like that, but like, it doesn't seem like there was much affection.
He's super excited to see her.
Yeah.
But he's work focused at the moment, and
yeah.
And also Mitch is, like, rightfully so.
Yeah.
He is trying to start this new job and go to class, and it's his dream job, and he has plans that he needs to get there for.
Yeah.
Right at this moment. Like,
Connie has no, like,
for this one.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
For this one, he doesn't have a leg to doesn't have a leg to stand on as much. Later in the episode,
she does.
Right. Later in the episode, Mitch is more disconnected and it's less justified. But
yeah.
Here, it's like, no, like, this all seems reasonable.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the way humans work. And I'm, yeah.
It's good.
Really well
it's
written.
It's really, really good. I'm surprised it's not written by Kathy Buchanan.
Yeah. Well, Hoopler's consistently good.
Oh, yeah. No. But, you know, Buchanan yes. notoriously does the Connie and Mitch stuff.
And we'll be writing the next two.
Oh, okay.
The wrap-up to the Connie and Mitch
yeah.
arc as we are covering.
Yeah.
Which, this episode is, like, Connie and Mitch is the B-plot of this episode, maybe? Or is it a double A?
I would call it a double A, as because it is so much of a, what we learned from the Borlands directly applies to the conflict with Connie and Mitch.
Right.
And, like, as far as time is being spent, like, Mitch is mentioned just as much. There's just as much parallels being drawn. Like,
yeah,
as much as you can have a double A plot, I would
right.
call it a double A.
Yeah, no, that's probably fair. I can make arguments for either one being the A plot.
Yeah.
But the title is off the Borland side of things, not the
True.
Mitch side of things. So
focus on the family thinks that. Nah, at least.
Also, they just wanted to keep the color thing going.
Do you think that was actually intentional? Is that
the,
like a
the
thing?
Color thing? Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
There's a note in the official guide. So when Eugene and Bernard did their road trip ages ago, they were all number. Like it was first something, you know, one or you know a couple.
One for
things.
The money,
right?
Two for the road or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And so they were all numbers, and so for this one, they decided to make them all color related.
Okay. Interesting.
Which gives us, yeah, the color saga,
what
as we've been calling
it. We
have
to have the color cover Eugene and Bernard road trip, because those episodes are so good.
I mean, dude, we can cover whatever we want. It's our show.
It's true. Haha, suck it, listeners. You're at our whims, is what we want to cover.
I mean,
not really.
But kind of. Like,
yeah.
I have a couple things that I want to cover that are not going to be particularly popular, but I think would be really fun.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, there's literally hundreds of episodes. So.
Almost 1,000.
Okay.
Then
we go back to the Boylans, right?
Yeah. So we get introduced to Mike and to Janelle.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that Janelle collects antiques.
Mm-hmm.
Has this very nice Hitchcock rocker.
Yeah.
A nice old rocking chair that Joanne immediately notices. And
she knows that from Boylan that Joanne collects antiques or has a store, right?
She knows from Connie when they were arranging things. But she doesn't actually know that Joanne's, like, down here to do antiques.
Okay.
Which is a little surprising, but whatever. I mean, we've never met her before, so she doesn't have to know anything.
Her name is Janelle. I've only known one person named Janelle, and it's the music artist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Miss Janelle Monáe is all I was thinking of as well. But.
It's very difficult, but, I sojourn on. So we have the connection with that, and they want, Janelle wants to take Joanne to the Smithsonian at some point to look at the compass together because it might have historical significance. And then we cut to the basketball game, right?
Yeah, well, so we get introduced to Michaela.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who is the daughter of Janelle and Peter Borland. She goes by Mike.
Mm-hmm.
She mentions that she's got a basketball game, and Connie and Joanne decide to go along to it. And it sounds great.
It sounds so good. Yeah. I had that written down too, that it's just like, oh, I mean, you know, I've attended and been a part of several youth basketball games in my day, and it's pretty spot on.
Yeah, well done, Mr. Alan Hurley.
Got him. He's really
carrying
his
A game for the for the sound in this episode.
There's not much sports in Odyssey. But
no.
But when there is,
I feel like when there is, it's basketball.
Yeah, yeah. Basketball or sometimes baseball?
Yeah.
Which baseball
or softball.
Like those are pretty easy because it's on ground. Like it's on like, you know, grass and stuff. And you have like the bat hitting the ball. So.
Yep. Yeah. Football doesn't work too much in audio only form.
Just a lot of crunching and the occasional tweet.
Oh, we do get we get tennis at one point with Connie and Mitch.
Oh, yeah, we do get tennis. But only very briefly.
Yes.
With the sports centric episodes, did you ever listen to the Holy Hoopster?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if you made it that far.
Oh, yeah.
So
additionally, throughout the thing, Janelle's waiting for Borland to show up.
Yeah.
And he's not. He promised he'd be there, but he's distracted. Whatever.
Mike's having an exceptionally good game.
Yeah, she's doing real well.
Doesn't Connie talk?
They're trying to. They want to go to the. Janelle's going to go along with Joanne to the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
Because Connie can stay home to watch Mike because Mitch cancels their evening plans.
Yeah.
For
presumably
bummer.
The similar reason in which Borland wasn't there.
Yes.
Stuff with Andromeda.
Yeah.
Is the reason.
Novacom stuff is like wrapping up. And so there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And so then we just get some fun scenes of Connie and Mike hanging out together back at the house.
Yeah. Which is so, it's really cute. Like, Connie's, like, really
Connie's
trying
so
to be
good with kids.
Yeah, she's, like, being really personable and, like, you know, befriending Mike, and Mike's very abrasive to it at first, where she just seems kind of, like, disinterested in it and very uncomfortable, but Connie kind of wears her down, and they eventually end up in the treehouse that she reveals, or that Mike reveals, that she's been working on with her dad.
Yeah, we also find out in there that Mike memorizes sports scores for her dad, and we're seeing that a lot of her sports stuff seems to center around, like, a relationship
with
her dad, who is a busy man.
Yeah,
who really likes sports. Comes up with the treehouse being like, this is our project, but, like, we don't get to do it that much.
So. Yeah, because he's there. And then she says, like, I try to do some of it myself and stuff like that.
But I can't. And so Connie goes, it is apparently an incredible treehouse.
Yeah.
They talk here about the fact that it's going to have, like, a separate bedroom with a door.
There's a bathroom, I think.
Yeah. Well, there's a kitchen.
Oh, there's a kitchen.
I think we find out later in the episode there's, you know, all sorts of cool stuff.
How would you rig up indoor plumbing to a treehouse? I mean, I guess you just have to run pipes.
Yeah, and it also might not necessarily be a working kitchen.
Oh,
it might
be like a play kitchen.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a Discovery Channel style treehouse.
Yeah, exactly.
So while they're, you know, working in this treehouse and whatnot, Connie finds what I imagine is a cedar trunk with a bunch of stuff in it, including
ballet shoes.
Yeah.
And pictures of Mike in ballet outfits.
I actually just realized that in my head, this has always been that scene in Tarzan.
Yeah, yeah, I totally get that.
They're in the treehouse and they're, like, going through the trunk.
And they find all the stuff.
I was like, why do I think it's a cedar trunk? I think they just say box. Then I'm like, right.
Oh. Tarzan. That's exactly it, because in my head, like, the decor of what the treehouse looks like is like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Wow.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, we thought the same thing. Shocker.
And so, she used to take ballet, and
stopped.
Connie kind of brings up, like, oh, like, you used to have a girly side, like, we should do something with that or whatever, and she shuts it down.
Like, yeah. And, like, she says, like, you know, I can, like, do your hair up like that, like, if you want. And because Mike admits that, like, every now and then she likes to look at them and try them on, even though they don't fit. Which is, it's really sweet. But she, again, like you said, like, she really shuts that down.
And then we get
parents arguing, right?
I think, I don't know, maybe my favorite scene in this episode? This episode's got a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it feels like a TV episode.
Yeah, this episode is, or this scene is so real.
Yeah.
In a way that Odyssey sometimes just feels kind of like, I don't know, like soap
because
opera-y
they don't need to,
and that sort of thing, whereas this feels like a genuine argument between a married couple.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, like, presumably in the kitchen or something like that at night. Between, you know, obviously Mr. and Mrs. Borland, Peter and Janelle for the layman. And it's basically about, you know, Janelle's upset at Peter for not being there for the basketball game and, like, saying, like, how well she did and stuff like that. And Peter's like, well, you know, like, work came up and stuff like that. Like, I wanted to be there. I was planning on being there, but it's not in my control. And to which Janelle fires back, like, well, you're never there. Like, I feel like I haven't seen you in months.
Mm-hmm.
And, like you said, like, it's such a real thing where it's like...
And it doesn't get resolved.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. And it doesn't... Yeah, they're very upset at each other, but more so just, like, upset at the situation.
Yeah.
And it's such a very real situation that I think they definitely leave it intentionally unresolved because they're not trying to paint this life in a good light because for Connie to see the flaws in it, they can't make it look nice.
Yes.
But it is so good, and it is so, like, it's palatable and relatable in a way that Odyssey often isn't because it forces such a, like, you know, internal resolution or moral
Whereas this is very much just like real people going through real things that doesn't tie directly to a theme.
Yeah, very much so. And then we have another basketball game.
Yeah.
Again, because they're every day?
I guess. Like twice a week, maybe.
Yeah. And the other thing...
I mean, maybe if she plays for a school team, because I've had games on like back-to-back days for school teams.
Yeah, but it's also like... I think it's during the summer.
Oh.
Because...
I don't know.
Unless it's a weekend or something. But Mike is definitely at home when they first show up, and then they go to this game, which is in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then, because the evening is when they have the Smithsonian thing and when Connie stays home with Mike. The next day, then, we also, like, that game is also in the afternoon. So, I am assuming that we're still in the school's out period of the show, which seems to line up, even though this episode aired in November. It seems to end up with the, like, line up with the show's internal logic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we've got, I don't know, we've got games every day.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're kids.
And it seems more Borland missing stuff, while I'm like, yeah, that's a bummer, also seems more reasonable when you acknowledge the fact that these are afternoon games and he works a job that, yes, goes later, but also most parents would struggle to make afternoon games.
Yeah, 3 o'clock game.
But the issue is more, though, that he's saying that he's going to be there and then not.
Isn't. Yeah.
Which is also Mitch's issue.
Hey, parallels.
Yeah.
And so it's so basically we are in the basketball game. We find out that the Smithsonian didn't quite go through the way that they wanted to. I think the guy wasn't there or something.
Yeah.
And so they'll have to come back, what they say, like Sunday or something like that.
Saturday, maybe. Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't do work on Sunday, Andrew.
It's illegal.
Saturday.
Not in Adventures in Odyssey. And then Mike is also not playing great. Like, she hasn't scored yet or anything like that.
She's doing poorly. Because
apparently she's, like, baby Kobe Bryant or something like that. Like, because then the minute that Borland shows up, she immediately, in my head, drives down the court and dunks or something like that. Because
she immediately scores after...
She recognizes that
her dad shows up. What? And then...
Like, what kind of skills is this?
And then... Right after that, hits the ground hard. Well, I mean, it's youth. She's motivated. We get the impression that she's a good player.
Maybe she just runs really fast.
Yeah. And then she, after scoring, falls, sprains her wrist, and is going to spend the next 3 weeks in a sling.
Yeah. They go to the hospital, right?
ER.
Which, okay, brief tangent. They rush the court when their kid falls. That's not a thing. Like, coaches and then trainers go out. The parents aren't allowed on the court because...
They might just be going down to the sidelines, though. Okay. We don't actually know.
Well, they say something like, we should get down there or something like that.
Right. That might just be to the sidelines, though.
Okay. Okay. I'm like, oh, no. If parents stormed the court every time somebody got injured, that would be a rough basketball game or a soccer game, in my experience.
And so, yeah, we now... Connie and Joanne have a good conversation in which, they're just talking about trying to coordinate with these moving schedules and how, you know, much time Mitch is putting into all this stuff and... Joanne kind of jokes and said, you know, Connie asks, like, how you guys did, and she's like, well, you know, Jack and I got married.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so she says, like, you know, it's nice to think of it that way. Like, it doesn't, Joanne kind of says, like, it doesn't really solve problems, but in that case it does, or did, and, like, wouldn't recommend it.
Right, this isn't a solution I'm recommending for you, this just happened to be what happened. We did.
Yeah.
And
which is good. It was just really good, because then Connie says, like, yeah, you know, like, sometimes I think about it, like, maybe that would be the answer. Like, maybe if I just was married to him and, like, had that, that would be better. But I think that again, like, what this episode does so well is that it gives you the glimpse into life of, like, so what does being married actually look like? And it does not solve the problems that they're having.
No.
Which...
It does a good job of not, like, candy coating it, of being like...
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing, but, like, it's also not the solution to a problem.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, and so then we get a scene with Connie and Mike. She's very poorly hiding the fact that she's stoked that she sprained her wrist.
Yeah, and she doesn't have to play basketball.
Yep. And she, throughout the conversation, like, Connie kind of makes a ballet comment, mm-hmm. and Mike seems kind of into that, but that requires two arms.
Yeah.
Her wrist is in a sling for 3 weeks. Yeah. She can't do ballet.
No.
Not even slightly. Yeah. It is a balance sport.
Yeah.
You cannot...
She could do, like, the standing, like, first position stuff, like, real basic, and then she'd have to have her one good hand on a bar.
Right, yeah.
So, you know. If you want to hear ballet talk, boy, don't come to me, but maybe a little bit, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have one of your siblings on the pod.
Yeah, they'll talk about it. They would find a way. They have danced, like, heavily concussed and stuff like that. They're...
Yeah.
Silly. I love them, but oh my.
But yeah, then they all she also then kind of scoffs it off and is like, yeah, that'd be, you know, that's girly, whatever.
Yeah.
And Connie says, you know, what's wrong with doing something that girls do?
Yeah.
Which she doesn't have a great retort to, other than bringing up the fact that she had overheard her dad say that, you know, he had always wanted a boy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what spurred on.
Mm. Well, no, so she says that she heard her dad talk about not wanting a girl. But later it's revealed that Borland, what he had actually said was that he had always wanted a boy.
Okay, yeah.
So it's a minute little thing, but it's a lot of... her being a kid, like, playing into the insecurity that she isn't affirmed by her dad.
Right.
And Connie kind of addresses that.
Yeah. So that was kind of her whole reason for being into sports.
Yeah.
And, you know, going by Mike instead of Michaela and, like, all of that stuff. The thing, too, that I maybe have an issue with is... Connie, and maybe it's supposed to draw attention to how much her parents have going and how, like, little attention they're giving things, but Connie's been here for 2 days and has pieced all of this together relatively easily.
Yeah.
Her parent, like, this has presumably been years. Like, she's on a basketball team and is good.
Yeah, it's been at least a couple years.
The fact that her... And, like, she's, like we said, visibly excited about the sprained wrist.
Yeah.
Like, how hasn't the rest of her family picked up on it? Like, I get the show, needs, you know, Connie to... Like it makes sense for the show, but also...
It's hard for her to...
I wish it had been more of a thing where... Mike was less, like, had less disdain for the basketball, and it was more just like,
what I really want to do is...
Right, like, I want to do this other stuff, where here it seems like she has actively for years been doing something that she dislikes.
Yeah.
Which is tough.
Yeah, and without her parents figuring it out and stuff. Right. But, I mean, I will say that, like, you know, within the grind of it and stuff, like, you can kind of put on a face for your parents that, like, they don't understand how unhappy you are with your current situation.
Yeah.
Like, I was on a soccer team for 2 years with people I actively disliked, and I hated going to every single practice, and my parents didn't know.
Right.
It was only after, like, towards the end where I told them, I'm like, hey, this is just a thing that I'm doing because I needed to get better, you know?
Right, but it's the thing of, like, Connie can see it, but the parents can't.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not a huge issue.
No, not really.
And so then we have this beautiful scene of Mike putting on all of, you know, Connie does her hair, mm-hmm. and she has, I don't know, presumably a dress or ballet stuff or
whatever. She looks girly.
Right, whatever on. And kind of, you know, walks in, and initially Borland's kind of like, what? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, what are you doing?
You know, did Connie do this or whatever? And she's like, no, like, I wanted to. You know, this is part of who I am too.
Yeah.
And immediately he's just like, oh yeah, like absolutely. Like,
yeah, you look beautiful.
Kid. I'm not gonna hold, like, yeah, I'm not gonna suddenly turn on you and be mean about all this.
And he says, so Mike then comes clean about like changing for her dad, like, to make her like her and stuff like that. And then she brings up the comment that she overheard about him not wanting a girl. And Agent Borland, Peter Borland, says, like, this is a really good line. He's like, yeah, your mom and I don't love you for what you do. We love you because you're our daughter.
Period.
And that's, like, full stop.
Like, and because of, like, the quote is, like, you know, we love you because you're our daughter, period. And because of that, I want you to be happy doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
Which is really sweet. I don't know. Well, so, yeah, I'm going to go in on a little side tangent or whatever. This episode could play very well as an allegory about people in the LGBT community.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, incredibly well so, but it is clearly not going for that.
No.
Because it's a focus on the family production.
And it's a child.
Unless, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's clearly not going that because it's focused on the family and it's also a kid.
Sure.
Whereas stereotypically it would be like a teenager,
right,
or something.
A teen,
like,
or something. Right. But, I mean, if it's an allegory, it doesn't need to.
Like, oh, I guess, yeah.
Like, it's not, I'm not saying this is literally outlining that. I'm saying that, like, it focuses in a lot of the same parameters of, like,
hey,
dad, her, you know, coming out and her dad being like, no, like, I still, like, I don't try, like, you don't need to.
No, it's okay because, you know, God designed her to be a woman and gender norms and stuff like that. So she's actually doing what God wants for her by dressing in pink, so.
Yeah, well, it is an interesting thing where you can get away with this episode because, like, sporty girl is a thing that, like,
mm-hmm,
we accept.
Yeah.
Although even, like, I don't know, it seems even a little bold for Focus on the Family to go as far as calling her Mike.
Yeah, like, it does.
There's something about it where it's just like, yeah, where she is really playing up the, like, athletic boyishness of,
yeah,
of this role, and, like, I'm all for it, but I can't imagine them them doing the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there couldn't be an episode where
there's a boy that plays basketball but secretly wants to do dance.
No, where there's a boy doing dance who secretly wants to do, well, who secretly wants to do basketball, I guess, would be the actual translation.
Well,
because
she
does basketball, but actually wants to do dance.
But, like, the gender norm and what we would think would be okay,
right,
is the boy wants to do basketball.
Right.
Or is doing basketball for his dad, but he actually wants to do dance,
right,
or something like that.
Right. And, yeah. So, like, I can't imagine them doing that.
It is definitely close enough to be like, huh.
Right. Where I'm a little bit like, did a Hoovler just pull, like, a real good fast one?
Yeah.
Like, is he secretly, like, this is gonna, like, this is my chance to make this statement and no one's gonna know.
Yeah.
I like that. That's my headcanon.
Oh yeah, I'm very okay with it because I already like the Hoobs and I'm rooting for him.
But yeah, it does, like, it plays out very much in a way where, yeah, where you, like, where I feel like those connections are there intended, or most likely not at all.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. It's
They're definitely
just
there. Well, and listening it in, you know, 16
right,
years later,
that's,
when
that's
this is
the
so
other
much
thing,
more of a thing.
It's a conversation point, and it's something that, like, we've been exposed to the, like, stories like this.
Yeah.
With that specific, like, tone to them in a lot of pop culture.
Has Odyssey addressed LGBTQ at all?
Not straightforwardly.
They've addressed, like, in the Truth Chronicles, they do, like, the whole, like, you know, Wit not wanting to hang a, like, a pride poster or something like that in Wit's End because he doesn't support that view of the family or something like that.
Yes, that's exactly. It's always because they're focused on the family.
And the only good kind of family where there's two kids and a mom and a dad. And
right. Anytime that stuff is addressed, it's super coded to be like, you know, it's all family stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how I imagine a family, which can also be extended out to be like the people must be married and mm-hmm. those things as well.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more blanket.
Yeah. They definitely like that.
But yeah.
Good on Hoobs for pulling a fast one if that's what he did.
Yeah, and if not, like, I think, see, the thing is, like, I think the episode works really well without that being
subtext.
It doesn't,
yeah, it's exactly, but, it's so good. And
but
like,
as it hit this point, I was like, that's interesting.
It feels
I
want to
talk about it,
that
even though I don't
it.
Think it's actually what was intended.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting point of conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it is a lot, like, I think that it's a message that is very important in that context, like, within the episode, but also, like, carries through to being now, where it's, like, the idea that, you know, your identity is not based in what you do.
Right. And even, like, even taking this, like, completely throwing out that read of it, the basic narrative of... Don't try, like, you don't need to change yourself to get your parents' approval.
Yeah.
Because that is, like, the baseline of what this episode is saying.
Yeah.
That you is a really good story
mm-hmm.
of, like, your parents are gonna love you. Like, you don't need to try and fit into the role that they
have for you.
Right.
Yeah.
And this one, it's not even a role that they have. Like, she is making an assumption based on a conversation that she overheard. It's
really good. Funny enough, that's not where the episode ends.
No.
We have a good bit more.
Yeah. We've got a quick bit more. But.
Yeah. So we have Borland and Connie and Mike, and her mom, I guess Janelle, all working on the treehouse together. Cause after that sweet moment, they bring up like, well, you know, can we work on the treehouse together?
Yeah.
And we get a really, really sweet moment of them being up there, them working on it, like stuff with, something with hinges, I think.
Yeah. Hinges is for the door to the bedroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Connie's kind of there, like kind of witnessing this interesting unity, but also she's gotten a lot of valuable perspective from this, which then transfers directly into Connie has those dinner plans with Mitch, as have been delayed.
Yeah.
Well,
no, this is just a single time.
Yeah.
This is we get another great scene of Connie having a comical interaction with a waiter.
Yeah.
As previously seen when she was trying to meet with Wit at mm-hmm. Hal's Diner. And she's like, you know, I've been late to so many things, but never when they're this important.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true, but whatever.
Yeah.
Find
it hard to believe.
But anyways, and so, yeah.
Who is the waiter voiced by? Because he's a familiar voice.
It's Bob Hoops.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, their waiter banter or whatever is...
So good.
Like, yeah, her banter's fun. So then Mitch finally does show up. Like, it's almost being played as though this is going to be like a he completely stands her up.
Yeah.
Which would have been crappy, but it wouldn't have had nearly the same punch as what actually happens.
Yeah.
And so it's a really great, like, trope subversion where you're like, mm-hmm. oh, Mitch is going to stand her up and that's rough.
Yeah.
And then it's actually he shows up and is not there.
Yeah, he
like
shows
he's
up.
So not
he shows
present.
Up late. He's, you know, apologizes for being late. Apologizes for not getting ready. You know, presumably he came straight from work.
Yeah,
like
he
I'm
did.
Imagining
he,
his
well,
hair is like disheveled.
He talks about. I think he came straight from school. He didn't get to change.
Yeah.
His phone rings. He takes the call.
Yeah.
And is like, no, like I can't do that. Whatever. Hangs up. I'm like, oh come on, Mitch. Mute your phone, like.
Well, so he has
always a. Your phone during dinner.
He has So he shows up. They kind of make awkward conversation.
Yeah.
Then it is very uncomfortable. Yeah. And then there's the first phone call. He takes it. It seems like it's urgent, but he's like, you know, no, like I have plans tonight. Like you can do this one without me or whatever.
Yep.
And then he hangs up on them, and then he starts talking to Kanye again.
Yep.
And it's like, are they talking about the weather or something? It's like talking about how she's liking Virginia or...
Yeah.
It's this very awkward, disconnected dialogue.
That Mitch wants to get out of the conversation. Connie's not entirely sure where to go with it because it's been a while since they've talked and they're catching up to do. And it always, like, when you see somebody for the first time after a while, it always takes a little bit to get back in the rhythm of it.
You'd be like, oh, wait, this is what we do? Right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then Mitch's phone rings again.
Yeah.
He just mutes it.
Yeah.
At that point.
Well, no, he picks up and says, I'll be down or something.
That is the time where he's like, you know, I'll be down after this or whatever.
Yeah, I'll be down as soon as I can, I think is what he says.
Yeah. And so,
And then he mutes his phone, puts it down, and starts talking to Connie.
And Connie is basically like, look, you just gotta go. Like, you're not actually here.
And Mitch Mitch plays it off like, no, like, I want to be here. Like, I made plans with you. Like, I want to be here. And Connie calls him on it. He's like, no, like, you actually, your head is somewhere else. You want to be somewhere else. Like, and Mitch kind of fights back and she's like, just go.
Yeah. And props to Connie for recognizing that and calling on it, him on it.
Yeah.
I wish Mitch had been, I wish Mitch was actually able to be present. And I wish that, I can't imagine having a job that you can't walk away from for an evening.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's people who do have it, and, like, it might legitimately be Mitch's issue here. But, like, I think more than anything, he's just struggling with, there's a lot going on, and he hasn't really figured out how to navigate it yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's not as though he doesn't want to be there and he's trying to get away. It's just he doesn't know how to balance work and life at all. And, I mean, we've seen Borland barely be able to do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understandable.
Yeah, and he does have a lot on his plate. Honestly, I mean, the best case scenario, I would have liked to seen, like, Mitch stick it out and stay with Connie and then, like, it'd be uncomfortable and then slowly it turns into something better. But you know, obviously, like, if you haven't picked up on it at this point, like, the relationship isn't going great at this point. Yeah, like,
they're definitely struggling, and it seems very much like they are still super into each other, but, like, they're starting to move in separate directions. And
And
that's been true since we started covering this Connie and Mitch stuff.
Yeah.
Is their ships are headed in opposite directions, but they are still trying everything they can to make it work because they are in love.
Yeah. And in this episode, I think, would be the first time where we see it where it's like, that love is not as clearly shown here. Like, Connie's really putting off, you know, like, is doing a thing, and Mitch just isn't quite there, and they're just in different places. And so Connie sends Mitch away, and Mitch says kind of like an awkward, like, I love you, and like, I don't even think you hear Connie audibly say, like, I love you too. You just hear you too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the episode goes out.
Yeah, and that's our ending note. So this episode is almost part one of, like, a three-part thing. Like, it's clearly setting up the next two episodes, which is, like, a full-blown two-parter with, like, no, like, the arc stretches across both.
Yeah.
But it's I like it that it's not just a setup episode. Like, it's a setup episode, but it also has this plot with Mike that's really good.
Yeah, that's super compelling. That it's one, it's internally, like, it's completely self-contained, but it's also very relevant to the larger plot. And then we get a decent Chris wrap-up where she's talking about, like,
I actually have quotes if you want that.
Because
she says, you know, I'm sure Mike is glad to know that her dad will love her no matter what.
Yeah.
unless she's gay.
No, no.
but it
or
once
even
again
questioning.
Like it once again played into that thing where I was like, you know, you could read this subtextually, or you could just take it as, hey, you know, you don't need to change yourself for your parents' approval. And then she goes, and it's good for us to know that the same is true about God. We're his children, and he loves us no matter what.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I do like as a note to end on. I wish Focus on the Family embraced that value more than other values.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is, and we knew that going into this show, that there were going to be points where we were like, this could, I don't know. The thing that this episode, like, I cannot fault this episode for what it is not.
Yeah.
Because it does what it's trying to do so well.
So very
and
well.
While I think, like, oh, there's maybe some interesting stuff you could have done on top of that, it also didn't need it.
No, it was...
And, like, you can totally read it with that subtext as the episode stands, and it works.
It's just an episode that has aged incredibly well.
Right. If you were to show someone this episode with no context of what Focus on the Family is, they would probably be like, oh, like, maybe they were hinting at that, and that's cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, because of our relationship with that, we know that that's not what they were hinting at, but it doesn't detract from the episode, in my opinion. It just...
Oh, but boy,
it just kind of feels like a missed opportunity. That being said, it's not that missed of an opportunity because it is so well crafted.
Yeah, like it's not like it was like, that could have been a 10. It's just like it's a 9 one way and it's a 9 the other way as
right,
well.
Right, exactly.
You know.
Yep.
Yeah. It was just a really, solid episode. You know, it's not light. It is not like I said, I for some reason thought that it was going to be more lighthearted, but it's not.
No, it's a
but it's very good.
Properly heavy episode, and it sets up really nicely for this next one.
Do you have any more final thoughts?
No. That's my wrap up for the episode. Before we jump ahead to plugs, we've got a couple more iTunes reviews to read.
Really?
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. We got two of them. Oh, sorry. Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
Very important.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, iTunes.
Is it actually? Oh yeah, Apple Music.
Yeah. But yeah, we have additional reviews from both. Okay. So this first one is from LTST Olson. It's a 5-star review. Is that Lieutenant Saint?
It might
Lieutenant
be
Saint Olson, who says, "Great podcast. I love this podcast, and I hope you make more. It's the perfect for people who love Adventures in Odyssey but are getting tired of the same old thing. I could do without some of the language, though. Keep it up! 3 exclamation points." Just
thanks.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Lieutenant Saint Olson.
Yeah, I will take it as Lieutenant
Saint.
Yeah,
thank you for loving us in spite of our flaws.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it. And also, tweet at us and tell me what the LTST means. I am genuinely very curious.
And then our other review is a 5-star review from Crafty Violinist, who says, "Enjoy this podcast. Haha, somehow I never left a review, I think. Welp, I'm officially known as Gracie of the blog. Nice."
Aw, hi Gracie.
So
Gracie of the blog. Great blog.
Gracie
great
of, welcome to Odyssey blog fame. Left us a 5-star review.
Gotta love her.
Yeah, additionally, we were left a 5-star rating with no review. So thank you, anonymous 5-star rating person.
I don't want to challenge this, but I wonder what our first 1-star review is going to be.
Keep the 5-star streak alive.
It's great. I love it.
I love that we have 6 5-star ratings.
Yeah, it makes me smile. Thank you, guys.
It does make me smile as well.
It's nice to know that this means something to other people.
Yeah.
And not just people I know in real life.
Yeah, that is a great feeling. You plugging anything?
Follow me on Twitter, I guess. I just started tweeting more.
Andrew is stepping his Twitter game up.
So. Yeah, it's not great, but it is.
Andrew underscore Sabo?
Just Andrew Sabo.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, pretty easy.
Yeah.
What about you?
What? No, I'm not plugging anything.
Plug free? All right.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
We'll be back next week with episode 533, Something Blue, Part 1.
Bye, guys.
Goodbye, folks.
Wad Fam Chalk Pod is a presentation of the Lititz Podcast Co-op. This show is a fan podcast and has no official affiliation with Adventures in Odyssey or Focus on the Family. As such, the copyright is ours under Creative Commons. Follow the podcast at WadFamChalkPod on Twitter and Instagram, or email us at WadFamChalkPod@gmail.com. Episode 38, Pink is Not My Color, was hosted by Dylan Weaver and Andrew Acebo, and edited by Dylan Weaver. And I'm Nathan Haverstick, hoping you'll join us next time for more of the WadFam Chalk Pod.